Support for KCUR's Up-to-Date podcast comes from Arvest Bank, believing that financial confidence should be within reach for everyone. Whether you're just getting started, planning for your future, or starting a new chapter, Arvest is here to help you plan and meet your goals every step of the way. Details at arvest.com or 20 locations throughout Kansas City.
Flame resistant, virtually weightless, Soccer City 26, a newsletter from KCUR. Its sleek design is extremely portable, keeping you connected with the happenings of the biggest sports event KC has ever seen. Sign up for Soccer City 26 at kcur.org/soccer. That's kcur.org/soccer.
From KCUR, this is Up to Date with Steve Kraske. I'm intern Nora Crutcher McGowan. Monday marked the beginning of Pride Month, which celebrates and remembers queer progress in history. Today on our book show, we're exploring books that are by, for, and about the LGBTQ+ community. Steve brought in three local book experts to share their recommendations. Adib Garam is the Kansas City author of the young adult novel Darius the Great Is Not Okay, which was named one of Time Magazine's 100 Greatest Young Adult Novels of All Time. Katie Stover is the Director of Readers Services at the Kansas City Public Library, and Mallory Krishna is a member of the Kansas City Sapphic Book Club. Let's get to it.
So Adib and Katie, you've been on the show before, but we got a first-time guest here. Let's get her warmed up right away. Talk to us a bit about the KC Sapphic Book Club, Mallory.
So KC Sapphic Book Club was a book club I found on Instagram. I think like on social media, it's just like everything's online, but this really like got me out of my house. So,
yeah. And what is it?
It is just a book club that we meet about every 3 weeks to talk about different sapphic books. So the first one I went on to talk about was Sunburn, which is really exciting. It's one of my favorite books of all time now. So, and wow. I'm glad I got the opportunity to talk to other people about it.
What's the book this month?
The book that we just did was So Gay For You, which is a memoir by two of the members of the L Word, which was a TV show back in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
So, and our next book is actually going to be Scorched Grace, which is about a queer nun.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Sunburn for a moment by Chloe Michelle Howarth, which follows an Irish teen's struggles to confront her identity against the pressure of her Catholic upbringing. What drew you to this novel to begin with?
It's just so incredibly lyrical. When I read it for the first time, I couldn't put it down for hours. And I think it's like really good that she is struggling against like her like sexuality and her coming of age alongside of just like this immense Catholic guilt.
What else did you like about the book? What else caught you about it?
I really like the main character. She's so unaware of herself and her situation. Like she does not think her friends are bullies and they are just going around terrorizing the town. Another point, this other woman is like falling in love with her and she screws her over in the worst way possible. And she's like, oh, she liked me? Like, yeah. What's wrong with you?
But this has become one of your all-time favorite books, it sounds like.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's Sunburn by Chloe Michelle Howarth, right?
Yes.
Sounds great. Moving on to you, Adib. It's Pride Month, but it's also the beginning of summer. One of your picks, The House of Now and Then, which you say has beach vibes, came out last month just in time for summer. Can you tell us why this is more than just a trifling summer beach read?
It is. The House of Now and Then by Edward Underhill is a sort of a fabulous queer tale about a trans man who rents a cheap cottage on Cape Cod, and he's sort of trying to get away from his past. And of course, it's, you know, a fabulous tale. And so his past catches up with him as he starts literally finding like the spirits of people from his past in there. And I think it's, you know, it's Cape Cod, it's summery. But also, you know, follows how queer history, you know, extends back generations. And I think particularly for the trans community, how they're always becoming themselves. I think queer people are always becoming ourselves. But I think that's like particularly poignant for trans readers.
Well, HarperCollins describes The House of Now and Then as magic realism. You included another book that some say falls into this genre as well. This one is titled Exquisite Things, which takes place over the course of 130 years. What periods does the book cover in relation to the LGBTQ+ movement?
Yeah, so Exquisite Things by Iranian-American author Abdi Nazemian follows two boys, basically, who after burning some pages of Oscar Wilde's work, somehow find themselves becoming immortal. and literally following their lives from Victorian England through 1920s Boston, 1980s London, and into the present. And it sort of spans this huge part of queer history, not only in America, but in England as well, as these two boys keep coming together and falling apart and coming together again. Yeah. I mean, it is a romance.
Well, Abdi Nazemian wrote exquisite things. He, like you, is an Iranian-American author who writes about queer love among Iranian-American characters. Why is this selection significant for your own identity and goals as a writer?
I think particularly now with the geopolitical situation, I'm particularly keen of how the Iranian diaspora is feeling about our place in the world,
yeah,
and how queer Iranian Americans or queer Iranian diaspora in general feels about whether we are deserving of love.
Mm-hmm. Just that simply.
I think so.
Yeah. I just was wondering, I introduced you and I mentioned your debut novel, Darius the Great Is Not Okay, named one of Time Magazine's 100 Greatest Young Adult Novels of All Time. What did that do to your career? What kind of impact has that had?
Well, for a while it was great. And then I don't know if any of you remember this, but we decided to have a global pandemic. And in the middle of the global pandemic, a bunch of people started banning books. And, you know, book challenges in America went from something like 200 across the nation per year to about 10,000 per year. I am on the board of directors for Authors Against Book Bans, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to fighting for the freedom to read. Mm. But certainly my book is one of those that has been challenged, banned, or simply not acquired by libraries and schools because they're worried that it might get banned or challenged. And so why bother borrowing the trouble?
Wow. And how widespread has that so-called ban been for that book?
For that book, not as bad as some of my others. But certainly it's impacted my royalty statements quite severely.
I was going to say, though, for some authors, you get placed on a banned book list and sales increase, in some cases skyrocket. But you're saying maybe that hasn't been the case.
Well, if there's, you know, say 10,000 books on the banned list, maybe one or two people will see their sales skyrocket. The other 9,998 of them, their books will not skyrocket. People won't hear about them. Libraries won't buy them. Schools won't buy them. People won't talk about them. They just kind of disappear.
That's really discouraging. Has it been discouraging for you?
Incredibly discouraging, but it makes me want to fight all the harder.
Does it affect the topics that you've chosen to approach and write about?
Not yet, but, you know, it's always in the back of my mind, oh, is this going to get this book banned? And then I remember that my name is enough to get my books challenged or banned in some places because it's DEI, that I'm not, you know, a white person with a Western European last name.
Having said all this, what are you writing about now, and is there a book in progress?
I just released another young adult novel called One Word, Six Letters last March, sort of inspired by the time I got called a homophobic slur in the middle of a school visit. Hmm. And it's about accountability and how we heal our communities and how we confront homophobia and sort of decide how we want to be as teenagers. And then I have an adult romance coming out in September called Isn't He Romantic, which is set in Kansas City. Hmm. It's I think, swoony and fun, has lots of Kansas City food. It's got fake dating. It's got the Kauffman Center for Performing Arts. It's got cellos. And it's really fun. I kind of run the gamut.
I gather that slur is the six letters that you refer to in the title.
It is indeed. And it rhymes with fly larvas. Larvae? Yeah. There we are. I don't know what the FCC's stance on that word is, so I'm not going to risk it.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, we're talking about a series of books that might appeal to folks with LGBTQ+ themes as part of our book show. Monday marked the beginning of Pride Month, and we're celebrating that by talking about some great books that might appeal to folks. Well, we got a few mysteries in this batch, Katie, that you picked. The Disaster Gay Detective Agency, which you said is perfect for fans of the Thursday Murder Club. Why is this pick good for queer fans of the mystery genre?
Well, because it features a delightfully young, messy, queer, lovably chaotic group of friends who shouldn't be investigating any kind of murder, and they wind up doing that. Hmm. And it all centers around Brandon, who works at the front desk of a New York hotel, and the most gorgeous gentleman checks in, and the next thing you know, Brandon and John are having a nightcap. And then John disappears, and all he leaves behind is his bag and his phone. And Brandon brings his friends together to help find the love of his life, and what they discover, instead of a great love story, is a murder. So this collectively chaotic group of folks are helping to track down this this missing person. And it's told in alternating chapters from the different characters. So it's not just one point of view. You'll get to know all of the people in Brandon's
circle. Which is sort of not unusual for the murder genre, right?
Right.
That approach, yeah.
It's like getting everybody's perspective so that when you all come together in the room at the end, everybody shares all their info and you can discover, well, who really did it and why? And why is this book important this month? Because it just shows the strength in family, that everybody deserves love, that your found family can be just as important as your blood family. It's witty, it's clever. It may center around queer characters, but this is a book for anyone who likes a fun murder mystery.
I was going to say the mystery genre, obviously very popular. As a librarian, do you see this genre becoming more common among books about and for the LGBTQ plus community?
This genre has never, ever gone out of style. What I love about mystery writers is that they are willing to look at what's going on in our climate, our cultural climate, and work it into their books. And so frequently for a lot of readers, that's the first time you hear about certain sociopolitical issues. Am I seeing more queer authors of mysteries? I'm seeing more queer authors of everything in publishing, and that's because publishing has made greater attempts to raise marginalized voices. And what your readers are learning is that you don't have to be white to tell a great story. Mm-hmm. There are lots of great storytellers out there, and it really doesn't matter whether you're queer, black, Iranian American, you just have a great story to tell, and everyone can resonate with their good story.
Has it taken too long to get to this point, in your view?
When I think back and when I started doing little bits of collection development at Emporia Public Library and just following closely publishing, yes, it's taken so long. It's taken too long. There have always been wonderful storytellers out there with many different voices. They usually are the voices that are keeping independent publishers and smaller presses afloat. Yeah. Because the independent publishers, the smaller presses, they're taking the risks that libraries take to get these voices on the shelves and in front of readers. So small presses, I have so much love and respect for them because they'll take a chance on publishing the kind of book that Adib mentioned that could get banned by writers who are not afraid to go there and write their truth and tell a story that might make some readers uncomfortable. Small presses will take that risk.
Okay. Well, that book that Katie just talked about, The Disaster Gay Detective Agency.
More Pride Month book picks when we come back. Stick around.
KCUR's up-to-date podcast is supported by St. Luke's Marion Block Neuroscience Institute. Every second during a stroke can destroy 32,000 brain cells. St. Luke's has 6 accredited stroke centers in the Kansas City area designed to treat strokes when every second matters. More information at stlukeskc.org/strokecare.
Ben Reed is a box turtle super spy. He'll spend years tracking one down that doesn't want to be found.
We yell and we shout and we get real excited when we find lost turtles, definitely. It's literally like finding a needle in a haystack, only the needle's trying to hide.
Ornate box turtles are an icon of the Midwest, but the modern world is making it hard for them to survive. Ben has a list of ways we can all help. That's on the podcast Up From Dust from KCUR.
Now for another mystery filled with what you might call dark secrets. Mallory, tell us a bit about another one of your picks. This one is titled Natural Beauty.
So I think something that's really come up in the last couple of years is the rise of more beauty and wellness brands. And so this story focuses on a young woman who recently has her parents in care. They were in an accident right when she graduated high school. So she has to care for them. And so she agrees to work for this beauty brand, Holistic. And very much there's some weird stuff going on, like very much like the stuff she uses and prescribes, like it'll actually change the actual length of her eyelashes. And so as she continues on with this, it's like, what else about her changes? And I think the thing about it is, like, she is a Chinese woman. And so living in America and also having to live up to those white beauty standards, I think was just very interesting for me, like, as a white person to actually see that on page. Another thing I really loved about it was just her love for her parents, who are Chinese immigrants and came over and are piano teachers. So very much like the story is about love and seeing it kind of slip away as she gets more involved in this.
Is this book based on some fact that certain beauty brands can have these impacts on women?
I don't know it's based off the fact, but I think it's more aligned with the fear and just the anxiety, just as we are pushed like certain ideals that, you know, aren't for everybody and not everybody wants that.
Now, this book has a lot to say about consumerism as well. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, we very much like in order to like meet these, you have to like spend a lot of money in order to do so. So very much like people are walking in and they're walking out spending like hundreds of dollars for stuff that may not necessarily need, but it's being told to them that they are. And they get these procedures that also they don't need. And of course, like I try to be the person who's like, well, it's for every person, and I can't say like you shouldn't do it, but maybe more people are doing it than if they weren't explicitly told to.
Okay, that book again from Mallory is titled Natural Beauty. Again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're running down some great books in honor of Gay Pride Month. We've got some local history in this collection, including former KCUR Director of Content CJ Janavy's book, No Place Like Home, Katie. Tell us about this book and what it sheds a light on.
This book has always been one of my favorites. I remember when CJ first told me that she was writing this book, and it came out in 2018. And what
I was going to say, it's been out for a bit.
It's been out for a bit. What I loved most about this book was the writing style, how conversational it was, how honest. I don't want to say homespun, but I want to say that it's accessible and conversational. And what I really loved was that it was a hyper-local look at a socio-political history of queer life in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that all these activists were living in Kansas until CJ wrote this book. No Place Like Home remains one of my go-tos to promote year-round for book groups that want to read something about Missouri or Kansas. It remains one of my go-tos, particularly in June when the library is doing displays. But I'll talk about this book year-round. It's one of my favorites. What I really liked most about this book is that Janavy shows us that all meaningful social change is local. And that's what's surprising, is that you don't realize that the most powerful voices instituting change, they're just from the most ordinary people in your neighborhood. And you don't realize that you're being a part of history while you're doing it. Yeah. It's not till you get to look back when you realize, wow, I was part of that thing, that rally, that protest. I signed that petition. I showed up for that lecture. You just don't realize that just standing up at a city council meeting and saying something can turn into a pivotal moment in history.
You know, what's the takeaway in this book about the challenge of living in a conservative state like Kansas compared to a place like, you know, New York or San Francisco?
I would say the takeaway is to be yourself, to get to know your community. And most of these people that CJ writes about were in smaller communities. You have to get along in a community, or rather, you don't have to get along, but you have to get to know your community members in order to have a successful community. Everybody. So when you get to know everybody in your community, whatever their differences might be, they're not nearly as strong as the similarities and the connections you have.
Yeah.
And once you connect with members of your community, then even if members of the community don't share your value system, they know you and they will have your back and they will stand up for you.
That book again, No Place Like Home, Lessons in Activism from LGBT Kansas, from CJ Janavy is the author there. Adib, let's come back to you. You picked Last First Kiss by Julian Winters. You say you love everything by this author. What attracts you to the work that he does?
Julian Winters is a gay black author of romance. He started out writing young adult romance and has since branched out into adult romance. And he has such a beautifully expansive view of what queer love looks like and what queer community looks like.
How so? Explain that to me.
All of his books are filled with queer characters, not only the main couple, but their life is filled with queer people around them. Friends, family members, occasionally, you know, frenemies, nemesis. So often we consume queer media in which, like, everyone in it is straight except for this one queer couple. I think, you know, there was a really popular episode of The Last of Us on HBO several years ago, which had this, like, Nick Offerman and, I'm blanking on who he was with. Was it Murray? Murray, what's his face? Anyway, Murray Bartlett? That sounds right. In which they were this, like, queer couple, but existed in a world where there was no queer life around them. They just had their love. And Julian always centers queer life in addition to queer love. And Last First Kiss is his latest romance about basically these two, like, best friends growing up, one of whom is pansexual and the other one and has known it. And the other one is sort of discovering that he might be some flavor of queer. And I think it really gives honor to the fact that as queer people, we don't all just come out in high school and know who we are. Sometimes we have to keep reevaluating who we are and open our life to more love.
And I gather Julian Winters can really write.
Yes.
Just that simple.
Just that simple.
Yeah. The book, again, from Adib is Last First Kiss by Julian Winters. Okay. Mallory, tell us about Woodworking by Emily St. James, which seems to be a heartfelt story about a teacher-student bond.
It is. And I think in most cases you would think that, like, it's very weird. Like, why would you reach out to one of your students in terms of, like, community? And it is because, like, these two characters both live in a small South Dakotan town. And so very much when our teacher character, Erica, decides, like, I'm going to make that first step. And so she talks to the newest student in town, Abigail, which is just like, is this crossing a line somewhere? Maybe. But they're both really funny characters. Abigail is just the reluctant teenager. She's like, fine, I'll do it, but I don't want to. And Erica very much is trying to come into her own, and she's very shy. And to see her come out of that is very beautiful.
Yeah. And what else did you like about this book?
I really like, I've seen this, like, very small genre of books that are set in 2016 and involve the election of a local official, most likely centering on just, like, how a more conservative or more Republican politician causes, like, danger for the members of the community. So very much it is, like, they're fighting against that.
I think I catch your drift. That book, again, Woodworking by Emily St. James. Katie, just time for one last one here. Maybe you got a minute left. You picked Vile Lady Villains. Tell us about how it's a queer retelling of a classic tale here.
Okay. Literary, gothic, romanticy with blood-tipped vengeance because Lady Macbeth walks through a portal after drinking some poison from the three witches and runs into Queen Clytemnestra. Everybody's got blood on their hands. These two women hate each other. They're trying to kill each other because that's just kind of how they are. They're just got that killing thing going. And then as they both start trying to find a way to get out of this mess, this world where these two fictional characters have met each other, and they're kind of pissed at the men who have written them and written their stories. So it's that romance trope. What is it? Friends to enemies to lovers?
Mm-hmm.
Enemies to lovers, that romance trope. But that's part of what makes this story so rich is that these two women discover that they don't want to be apart. And as we know, as readers, they will eventually have to separate.
That's Vile Lady Villains. Who's the author
again? Oh, that's Danae Christopoulou.
That was our host, Steve Kraske, talking with Adib Karam, Katie Stover, and Mallory Krishna. Up to Date is a production of KCUR, and this episode was produced by me, Nora Crutcher-McGowan. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again soon.